extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. It's a beautiful Thursday, a conference final Thursday. Charlie Davies in the house, slumming it with us, Dave. Just down here in the gutter.
I actually don't know who that is. I stood.
Did he sign something for you?
He signed nothing for me. But wow. The highlight of my day yesterday was I went down to Brooklyn Bridge Park, my territory, to watch Charlie on the Champions League show, and he was
Time out. Destination Brooklyn.
Sorry, Destination Brooklyn. Of course, he was nice enough to come out of the back to say hi to a normal person like me. Yeah. And when he came out, the swarms of autographs and selfies and. One guy jumped right in front first, selfie with Charlie, walks away, comes back and says to me, "Hey, who is that?" I go, "That's Thierry Henry. Do you not know that?" He goes,
That was hilarious.
And then right after you shook Charlie's hand, a handler came over and sprayed his hand with,
yeah, obviously,
you know, with the anti-germ.
But Charlie was signing Arsenal jerseys. He was signing Messi jerseys.
The unwashed masses.
Yeah.
How was it, Charlie? Destination Woodgrain. You're back with us, man.
It was amazing. I enjoyed every second of it. And I'm also looking forward to MLS Cup playoffs. So there let's do this.
One thing I will say about Charlie, you know, props to him. We love having him on the show. He is, I count him as one of the best friends I have in my life. At least if we're saying just soccer friends. Still haven't got the invite out to the, you know, to home. So we'll see about that down the line, just to cement the friendship. But you know what? He never lets his head get turned, as they might say in England. He's got transfer interest. He's got other shows he's on, but he does not let his head get turned. He is loyal to the Extra Time brand, and for that, we love him. We love him. What was the highlight? You're hanging out with Thierry Henry, with Schmeichel, with Micah Richards, with Jamie Carragher. Give us a story, and then we'll go into the conference final previews, of which we will go very, very deep. Of course, you know, on Sunday, LAFC hosting Austin at 3 p.m., ABC, ESPN3 in Spanish, and also Philly, a rematch with New York City from the conference finals last year, 8 p.m., at Subaru Park on FS1 Fox Deportes. Give us a story, man. Tell us, make us feel a little jealous. Make us feel like we were there.
The only stories I have is just the energy level was crazy. And we were, you know, playing, taking free kicks, penalty kicks. And then TT said, "All right, let me start doing all these tricks." And he hits it off his heel and can do this spin into the side netting from like the corner, and I'm like,
I've seen the Eric Cantona commercials, Charlie. You don't have to explain to us.
This is when it really hit me.
Yoga bonita.
We're playing with all these little kids at night, and they got all the lights on the turf field. We're playing, you know, playing 1-2.
Playing soccer.
Soccer, yeah.
Okay.
Just and sure. Thierry comes on the field, and before it was just Mo and I with on different teams with these kids, and the kids are having so much fun, and then Thierry gets on the ball. Clint's on the other team. Clint starts going hard. Thierry starts dribbling. All the lights are coming. And I was like, this looks like a Nike Freestyle commercial back in the day. Like when he was in the those
World Cup. The boat pulls up, Charlie, and you all get in the boat and you start playing.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh my God, what is happening here?
Charlie's vocal cords are a little sore. He had a lot, you know, a lot of opinions to me. How'd you do it? A lot of things going on. He had a little karaoke last night, late night in New York City, mm-hmm. but he's back with us. Let's jump into it. We know we're going somewhere. Not this weekend, but the next, November 5th, MLS Cup. We're going to go one of three places. Los Angeles, Bank of California, Philly, Chester, Banks of the Delaware to Subaru Park, or Austin to Q2. It depends on the results. If NYCFC don't beat Philly, no chance to go to Austin. So it's a low percentage chance that they will have Q2. It'll be Verde and Black for MLS Cup. But there is a chance. It is there. If LAFC win against Austin, we know where we're going. We are going to LA. If Philly win and LA lose, we're going to Philly. So we're kind of playing with these different scenarios. We've talked repeatedly about where we want to go. Some other facts for you. Unless NYCFC repeat, we will have a first-time MLS Cup winner this year. For the very first time, be LAFC, who've been chasing this for their entire existence. Philly, in theory, I guess they were chasing it for their entire existence, but like it wasn't a realistic chase until recently. But now they want it, obviously. Austin, 2 years in, they would pull in Atlanta United. Unless NYCFC repeat, Austin, Verde, and Black going to CCL. So even if LA or Philly win it and Austin don't, as long as NYCFC don't win it, Austin are going to CCL. Charlie, what are the percentage chances we are going to LA? What do you got? We're not exactly math majors here.
I'll go 70%.
70%. Wow. Got a lot of faith in that side of the city, huh? Okay. What about Philly? What are the percentage chances we go to Philly then? Obviously 70. You have 30% left. I'm just establishing the facts.
I'm going to go 20%.
20 and 10%. Feels high to Austin. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with those odds?
I'll go 25.
Probabilities. Right. Okay, and then
5% to Austin.
Dave, do you agree with those odds and probabilities here?
I was asked this before, so I'm just going to go with the same numbers. I think I said 60 LA, 35% Philly, 5% Austin.
Where would you want to go just on your own personal whim? Best environment, best city, best spot. Don't play the political game with me right now.
I've said this a million times. I'm good with all of them. I would be stoked for Philly. I will be there for the
political game.
I will be there for the conference finals. I'm so excited to be there for that game. But then I'll have already done it. So, you know, I'll be happy to travel. I guess if I had to choose in an ideal world, it wouldn't be in LA because we've done so many big events in LA, whether it's past MLS Cups or All-Star or El Traficos.
And, so that's a reason not to have it.
Whatever. There. Yeah, I think so, Charlie. I like to try new things.
Just variety, spice.
That's why I don't own. I don't. You bought a house. I don't own. I like to move around. I like to keep things, spicy.
Right. you don't got the castle. The castle's not for everybody, okay?
True.
I'm going to throw out just for fun and less political, but sort of political. Let's go to Austin. Let's have the storyline of a potential, you know, two-peat for NYCFC. Mm-hmm. Let's bring laminated pieces of paper with predictions on them out of the woodwork. Let's have a big party in Texas and see if they can back up all their talk about bonus games, etc. By the way, MLS Cup would be the ultimate bonus game, a game that nobody expected Austin to be in. Could they win it? I don't know. They got to win one more before they get there. All right, let's dive into everything from the AT&T 5G virtual studios here. I guess we'll start with in addition, it's not just the games today. I'm going to scroll down on the rundown for you because the news machine in MLS has been going crazy while we've been focused on the playoffs. First of all, Sam Stachel, Pablo Maurer reporting that it's a potential playoff format change. Since 2019, we've been doing the single elimination thing. Maybe that'll change in 2023. We will talk through it. Group stage, perhaps? TBD, pros and cons. We'll dive in, give you our opinions on that. A bunch of coaching news. Also, Joseph Martinez news. Apparently, he's played his last game for Atlanta United. He has been told he won't be a part of their future. Oh, that's news to us. Thiago Amado, by the way, won newcomer of the year. We'll go into Christian Latanzio, got an extension. Wilfred Nance could be headed to Columbus. Ben Olsen's interviewing with the Dynamo. Things seem pretty far along. Timbers extended Gio Savarese. They're chasing a number 10 from Denmark, et cetera, et cetera. And Chris Wondolowski has a movie made after him. Charlie, we'll need to get an update on any potential movie based on your life as well, because I would certainly watch that. Let's dive into the Western Conference game that'll start things off on Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern on ABC, ESPN3 in Spanish. Austin is 2-0 this year against LAFC. I remembered that, but I needed a little prompting to do so. 2-1 in LA. Only two teams have won at the bank this year. Nashville was the other one on decision day when it was, you know, not literally nothing at stake for LAFC other than pride. And then they won 4-1 in Austin. What's the narrative? We'll ask that about all these games. And I'll, you know, being the king of the narrative, I'll try to take that one on. I mean, the narrative, I think, for LAFC is it's sort of all or nothing. We know that. What?
You asked the question.
Yeah, exactly.
You're the king of it and then just started answering.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the king of it.
Oh,
come
man.
On. I'm not going to let my subjects
Charlie,
jump in on my territory.
Are you here for this?
Yeah.
No, we don't.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like that scene.
You
it's
want
like
to karaoke?
Scene. It's like House of Dragons where they're like, oh, what's going to happen with Driftmark? And the king just drags himself out of his chambers. He's like, not without me.
Wow. Early on for spoilers.
You haven't
much?
That was
but I'm just saying that happened like two
many
weeks ago.
Episodes ago. Come on, I know Charlie's up to date.
I am.
He's never behind.
I would have been heated if I wasn't. I would have just closed the computer.
Apologies to anybody who just got. I didn't spoil the whole thing, but you know, look, we know what it is for LAFC, right? It's this is it. You know, Carlos Vela basically said it. Supporters Shield is nice, wonderful. We'll put some charcuterie on it if we celebrate MLS Cup, but. We're about one thing, and that is winning this thing. You know, that's why you make the signings they did. Although those signings, Gareth Bale, Chiellini, et cetera, Teo, it doesn't even appear they're going to be impact players in this. We'll talk about that in just a second. So for LAFC, it's clear. At home against Upstart Austin, and I think Upstart is still, I think it's still accurate in year two, they expect to win, and they expect to host MLS Cup. And when they host MLS Cup, the expectation will be the same as it is now, which is they expect to win that as well and get the double. For Austin, I'm not saying it's all cash from here on out, but they just reached the conference final in their second year. If they lose this game, it might be heartbreaking just in terms of what was at stake for them, but it won't be like, it won't be a disaster by any stretch of the imagination.
And here's why. It's not just that it's year two, which I think is the right argument, but it's Josh Wolf, long-term contract, young coach. And then you look at the core of this team and no one is really at the edge of their productivity. You could argue Maxi Urruti, you could argue Ethan Finlay. That's not who this team's built on, right? So from Brad Stuber all the way up, the expectation is most of them will be there next year, and most of them will be as good, if not better, than they are now, right? Danny Pereira, a year more. John Gallagher, having played left back, a year more. Diego Fagundes continuing to grow. So that's the other side of it for me, where it's like the blueprint is clear for Austin that this is the start of a really successful time. Now, with in saying that, how many good teams have not been here, right? How many good teams have been built and don't get there?
Yeah.
How often do you get to a conference final and your best player gets hurt, right? Or you win Supporter Shield and Mauro Diaz goes down. Like, that's the other side of things, but I agree with you in terms of narrative.
I also think that to go to what you're saying about their ceiling can and I think should be higher if they get more out of those U22 spots, which goes to sort of what you're saying, like, can Ethan Finlay, et cetera, like, they've been great, but they haven't been the guys you expected to be there. Can you get more out of Gite, which they did in the last game? He scores the goal, he starts. That was sort of what he was supposed to be doing this whole time. Kolmanich, Rodney Redis, haven't seen much from him. Rigoni, haven't seen much from him either. He's a DP. There are these sort of, hey, we expect a lot out of these roster spot players that haven't delivered yet at that level. And some have, you know, like, look, Driussi is an MVP finalist, probably not going to win it, but arguably the best player in the league, he has. But there is still more to go under that ceiling if they can get more out of those players, maybe in this game, maybe in MLS Cup, but certainly down the line as they continue to build. So congratulations to them, but it's obviously not over. Let's go here, Charlie. Who is the best player in this game? That's maybe a difficult question. Maybe there's some questions around that regarding health and who can actually play. But just your gut feeling, your opinion, who's the best player in this game?
For me, it's Carlos Vela. He is the best player on the pitch if he is able to play. Now, I don't know what his fitness is, if he's 100% fit, 90%. At this stage in the season, it's very rare that players are 100%. So how close is he to feeling good? Can you expect him to play 90 minutes? Those are the questions I think that are going to be around Carlos Vela, but Carlos Vela is just too talented. He is the best player on the pitch. But in saying that, Sebastian Driussi is in the form of his life.
Yeah, three goals so far in the playoffs. I pulled Sebastian Driussi's home and away splits just because I was curious. Because I'm used to seeing him celebrate with the big orange, like the big orange, the big green strobe. And there's a reason for that. 19 games played at home, including playoffs, 18 goals, 5 assists. Away, 7 goals, 2 assists in 17 matches. So it's a pretty big drop-off, but when you're looking at 25 goals, scored 7 assists, you're also like, okay, well, you know, there's a drop-off there, but his impact has been incredible no matter what. Is it a concern, or is it something to think about, Dave, this home-away split for Driussi? Because they are, in a lot of ways, so reliant on his runs, on his finishes, on the way that he sort of changes, you know, gravity and space for the players around him.
The concern is how Austin plays home and away. And so that's sort of like looking at it from, I think, a little bit too close. Driussi, Driussi scores goals when they are playing on the front foot because the ball falls to him in and around the box, and he is elite, now we've seen, in MLS, at finishing and being in those areas. So, Austin, the concern is, can they play the way they did against FC Dallas at the Bank of California Stadium? And if they cannot, then their talent is not set up in their best way to play at their best. That's how I see it, whether that makes any sense to you or not. Now, I will add, I asked the question before the last game, like, okay, who sets the tempo on this team? Because the RSL game was going against them, and there was no Reynoso to sort of take the reins and decide that they were going to try and play through it. He did that against FC Dallas, though. It was Driussi's movement, his push, him dropping deeper, picking up the ball, attacking guys in the first 20 minutes that set the tone against Dallas. So I have even more confidence now, if I'm an Austin fan, that he can do that in this game, no matter how LAFC sets up.
How many Austin players would break into the LAFC starting lineup?
Stuver would start.
Outside of Driussi.
Yeah, I would take Stuver.
Stuver would start. I think Ring would start as well.
Who does Ring starts at D-mid, you're saying?
It doesn't matter. He's better than Kellen, and he's better than Ilya Sanchez week in and week out. Okay. Right? Like he's more durable. He's more athletic. So he starts 100%. He's a starter. However you want.
In your midfield, you're saying there are two Austin players probably and one LAFC because Cifuentes is in this team.
Yeah.
So you're probably saying Ring, Cifuentes, and Driussi.
Yeah.
Diego
Hugh Michele coming through the
I know.
Wall. Cool. Michele,
yes. Giannone, watch out. If we see him in MLS, he already said, I'll see you at MLS Cup. And if he listens to this, we may not see each other for long. Left wing, Buonga or Fagundes? And not on production over the season, because obviously Diego takes that in a landslide. Yeah. Just strictly
Buonga. On
Buonga. Yep. Explain.
Buonga hasn't had a number of matches under his belt in Major League Soccer, but what he has shown is just this tenacity, the aggressiveness, the pace. He's a game changer. And I think Diego Fagundes is a great player. Don't get me wrong, but he's not a game changer. Buonga is a game changer. You can see that with his dribbling ability. He can finish. I think he's more cutthroat when he's on the ball because he can beat you on the dribble. Diego Fagundes is more come into the middle, head up, good distribution, can take shots from outside the box, but more importantly, he's more of those one of those players that plays the 1-2s, you know, finds good spots, but he's not going to beat players on the dribble. He's not going to be running at back lines and push them back and create space for other players with the movement on the ball.
Would you agree, Dave? Are we going Buonga? And if we go Buonga, I think we're going all three LAFC players up top.
Because I don't think that
Chicho's going to take it and Carlos Vela's going to take it.
Yeah, I don't think that I would put Buonga today, like for this game. I have no doubt that next year I would say Dennis Buonga because the Gauss theorem. You're welcome. But that's where I would stand right now after the way Fagundes has played this year and carried moments where Buonga, I understand a lot of what Charlie's saying, but Fagundes is the second most important creator, ball dominant player on his team. For Buonga, you look at his goals, they're all coming off those players.
For the sake of a split here, I'm going to take Diego Fagundes. Just in terms of current form, current importance to his team.
Charlie's so mad.
I'm just saying.
Current form.
Buonga He just showed it. I get it.
Which is current and form. It's almost like this is
you
what you're
dumped
telling
on
me.
The galaxy if, all year. So now Mbappe, you're going to call them world beaters. He beat bums. No, I'm just, that's not, I don't actually believe that, but I'm okay. Just trying to rile Charlie up.
What you're saying is basically like if Mbappe was dropped into this league and he had only three or four matches, well, I'm going to go with longevity in this league because he's had a great season all year.
We're not talking about Mbappe.
I'm just saying that's what you're using as a reason to choose Diego Fagundes over a player who is clearly, I think, the better player pound for pound.
Is Gareth Bale better than Diego Fagundes?
Yes.
Would you take Gareth Bale over Diego Fagundes?
Not right now.
Yeah, because we're talking about the moment, Charlie.
Because he's
injured. We're not talking about forever. We're talking about right now.
And that's why I would still take
right now.
And that's why I'd still take Buonga over Fagundes right now. right now.
I think I probably mostly agree with you, Charlie. But
you're just trying to fire me up or what?
Yes, but in disagreeing with you, I just stirred the cauldron just to the perfect temperature. Oh, just took a little taste. Mm, that is what we're trying to make. That is what we're trying to make.
I would say...
You honestly believe that, Goss?
What?
That Bouanga's not a more effective or better player than Fagundes right now.
I don't... I do not believe he is more effective right now in the way
that they affect the game. Yeah. How about that? Can we agree on that?
Yeah,
and I think you define that perfectly in the sense that Diego is more of a like, get on the ball, cut it back a little bit, be the guy that sees the pass or sees the moment or sees the space.
He is the Carlos Vela in his team. He is the chance creator off the wing who opens space up for the other guys and sets them up to score. Maybe that wouldn't work for LAFC or whatever if they were in the same team, fake thing that we'd be made up. But tomorrow, he is the more necessary, important player for his team having a good year than Dennis Bouanga is right now, which, as I said, I don't think will always be the case, but it is where we sit.
All right, we're taking Chicho Arango, right? No offense to Maxi Arruti, no offense to Gite, but like it's not really a conversation there, I don't think. It's Arango. So we're taking Arango, then we're taking Carlos Vela on the right wing. So now the way I have it set up, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, because I broke the tie for Diego. We got 4 Austin players, and we've got 3, I believe, LAFC players, and we're going to the back line. I'm taking Hollingshead at right back. Nick Lima's been really good, but I'm taking Hollingshead. Anybody disagree?
Nope.
Who are we taking in the middle?
I'm going straight across LAFC. The whole back line.
Straight across LAFC.
Straight across.
Who would break in on Austin? Dave, who has the argument here? Gabrielsen, maybe?
Probably Cascante, I actually think. But I wouldn't do it. So... if I'm being honest, this isn't saying Austin's worse or has no chance or anything. It's just now that Segura is healthy, Segura at his peak in MLS, which I don't think we're at, but we're close enough. They're not worse than anyone on Austin. And Chiellini's the next guy up, which makes it tough. And obviously Mamadou Fall was on the team this year, but is no longer with them. And so, yeah, I wouldn't put anyone from Austin in. I wouldn't say they're that far off, but I would probably pick the LAFC guys across the board. Like Gallagher and Palacios, I'm much lower on Palacios than all of you are, but they're successful for the same reasons, and Palacios has done it longer at that position. So, you know, stuff like that, I wouldn't shift.
Okay, that's 7-4 LAFC. That's where we net out.
I would say, though, the Stuver, Crapeau is the tightest decision in this team.
I don't think it's tight. Stuver, 100%.
You think Stuver's by far, like it's clear and obvious?
This year.
Yeah, I agree on this year. Crapeau's season last year would be easy, Maxime, but he's not.
See, I don't actually agree with that.
Really?
Yeah.
Last year he was absurd.
So was Stuver.
Okay, well, it's close then. We're taking Stuver, though.
Yeah.
All right. If Carlos, we asked ourselves, is Carlos Vela going to be ready? I think he is going to be ready. I think he starts this game. He played 78 minutes against the Galaxy. But what if he wasn't, Charlie? Like, at what point, and we'll talk about this more with Maxi Morales as well as Alejandro Bedoya, at what point don't you start your star? Like, if he can only play 30, if he can only, like, what if he can play 45? Like, is there a world in which Carlos Vela does not start in your mind, given everything that Vela has said about MLS Cup, given his availability in the last match, and given his importance to the way this team plays in what is arguably the biggest match in the history of the club?
If he can play 45 minutes, he starts. If you can play 45 minutes, and ultimately, You can either play or you can't play. And typically, if you're talking 30 minutes, 10 minutes, 45 minutes, it's basically off of fitness and not so much health. Because if you have a strained hamstring or a strained groin, it's you can't take 15, you can't take 20, you can't take 5. Like, that's just what it is. So if he can play 45, he starts. And most likely, he'll play closer to 60 or 70, depending on how he feels. If you can't give you more than 15 minutes, then he probably doesn't even play. You wouldn't even play him. And in that case, it's still okay for LAFC because they have Opoku. And I think Opoku has been really solid this year. There have been moments where I'm like, man, he's got to get more playing time because he's effective. So I still think it's a good position to be in if you're LAFC.
Yeah, for me, it's a Poku. I don't think you're going to see Gareth Bale start a game. Maybe if he sticks around in MLS next year, sure, but not this year. I don't think Chiellini starts for LAFC. Not with Segura back. Not with the partnership between Segura and Murillo. I just don't see it happening.
No.
So, yeah, it's a Poku, and then what? How do they use Bale and Chiellini, though? Like what?
I think what we saw.
This is crazy. Like middle of the year, we're like Gareth Bale's here. We're doing over unders on 12 goals. He's going to dominate, et cetera, et cetera. We get to the conference final, and LFC's like, yeah, we don't really need him.
I think what we saw from the Galaxy,
we don't need him. I think the combo is he hurts the team. It's not. It's not what do you get from him. It's can you afford to have him in?
I don't think it's LA.
They went to Austin and got smoked. In his first ever start.
It's health related. It's your right winger is not going to be the reason you lose 4-0.
4-1.
4-1. It's not going to be the reason. you can't say, oh, Gareth Bale started, so now the team's going to ship goals and it's all on him. It's all his fault.
No, but you're carrying water for Carlos Vela. You're carrying water for Chicho Arango. You've got two fullbacks who their best attributes are attacking. Ryan Hollingshead's the leading goal scorer from defender in MLS. Diego Palacios is basically a winger. You do have, there is a limit, right? There is the straw that broke the camel's back.
So Gareth Bale is the player that you would decide to say, that's the reason why LFC are poor today.
Would you start him instead of Carlos Vela?
I'm not starting Gareth Bale, period, because he's not healthy. He's not fit. He's not match sharp or fit. So he's not playing. Sure, he could come off the bench if he's training and you say, okay, we think we can give you 15 minutes and 20 minutes and it's not going to be an issue, but he's not starting. And Chiellini is another perfect example of, okay, we got a lead. We need to bring on an extra defender, lock it down, someone who's good in the air. And we're going to sit back because we're not going to play a high line so he can get burnt by some like Gite or Driussi. We're not going to give that space behind him. We're going to lock it down.
He doesn't have any yellow cards yet, Charlie, so he could technically just reach up and grab the ball.
Yeah, he could do that. But then there goes that yellow card, that freebie, right?
Yeah, so that's true.
I would say,
yeah, use it if you can.
But that's how you use Chiellini. He's insurance. You want to lock it down. You need a veteran who's been in these situations before, who can hold people accountable, who gets people in the right positions on set pieces and dead balls, which is really where teams look to capitalize if they're down a goal at the end, or the long ball, just making sure that he provides cover. That's why you bring in a player of that caliber with that experience, given he's old. We knew he was not going to come in to be a starter and play every game or even play a majority of the games. He just doesn't have the legs anymore. But what he does have is the brain. And sometimes you don't need the legs when you have this. So in these situations, very specific, point-specific situations, which LA feel we're going to have a majority of possession, we're going to have the goals, we're going to need a player to come in and say, guys, this is how you close out a game. Watch me.
I don't know. I don't know that they will have the majority of the possession.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I don't know the answer. That, to me, is the whole question of the game. Do they play the way they played to open up against the Galaxy? Or do they try and out Austin FC, and the luxury for LAFC is they can make that decision because they can do both at a high level. The question is what's going to be more effective for them? What's the better game plan? And I don't know the answer to that. And only Steve Cherundolo is going to be able to decide. But it feels like as the season's gone along, they've sat deeper and deeper and they've started to find their feet again. And a lot of that is to open up the space for Buanga and Vela to operate in transition. And some of that is Austin's going to try and do it anyway. So rather than try and fight against that grain, just accept it and take advantage of the openings it allows you.
I mean, I would be playing for that against Austin. We just talked about how we would take the back line of LAFC over all of them. We watched that RSL game when RSL went back into a deep block, basically, and forced Austin to just whip in crosses. Austin didn't get, I mean, it was like scramble time in the box, like, LAFC have better defenders. They have a better midfield. They're better able to recover the ball and get on the break. And once they get in the break, where I agree with Charlie is Buanga is a freaking menace. And Carlos Vela is like the perfect director out there, you know, with the wand, just like, okay, well, here's where it's going. Here's the turn. I created that space. I've got two runners in front of me. God knows Chicho Arango is going to be on his horse. If I was Strundle, that is how I would try to set up the play. I would try to set up to counterattack Austin to death and know that you only need one or two chances. Like we saw NYCFC, they only needed one or two chances. If you have a level of finisher and the level of efficiency and the ability to create chances that aren't just like 5% chances, that are true big opportunities, and you have Chicho and Bawanga now and Carlos Vela and Sifu on the end of those, if you go up 2-0, Austin is once again playing straight into your hands, and they're going to have to put the pressure on you, and they haven't proven that they can break down a low block.
Yeah, I think it's also, though, an assumption to say that Murillo and Segura and Crypto are good sitting in and defending high volume. It's also an assumption to say Palacios and Hollingshead can hold their space, or that that's Ilya Sanchez's best skill set, or Cifuentes helping you keep your shape closed from 35 yards or 40 yards from his own goal. I don't know that that's all true, and I think you can go back.
You don't know if Palacios can defend
1v1. Yeah, 100%.
You don't know.
Yeah.
You know, he's going against Ethan Finley.
Okay,
fair. He was literally just north and south.
Yes, legit. But
like, there's no sideways movement. There's nothing unpredictable about Ethan.
But it's
Finley.
Also dealing with the layover from Lima and dealing with Driussi coming into that space and becoming a triangle and being that third option, right? It's more than just dealing with Finley. The point is, the lower you sit, the higher amount of the game you have to not make mistakes close to your own goal. And for some teams we have seen this year, that has been the death kiss, mainly Columbus. And obviously LAFC is better than that, but that is not the skill set these players were brought in for. And that is not their most comfortable positions.
Okay. Well, I would just say, looking at Austin on that right side, Lima, Finley, because of the lack of imagination when they play, that makes it easier for a player like Diego Palacios if he does struggle defensively, because he's not going to be pulled in.
Yeah, Lima has started to underlap more, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
But he knows exactly how it's going to unfold. And as far as breaking down a low block, they don't have the ideas to unlock a back line that is sitting deep. So I think it plays right into a player if they're considered weak 1v1 defending. Mm-hmm. In this case, it makes their job a little bit easier because they don't have to worry about this and going inside and overlapping and creating and keeping the ball and being able to be beaten on the dribble, because neither of them can beat you on the dribble.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't disagree at all. The one thing I would say to when you mention Weeby, the amount of crosses and stuff, I think they've already they watched
the lesson.
Tape.
The lesson's been learned.
Yeah. I would be shocked if they fell completely into that.
I completely agree. Completely agree. But then so much is going to be on Driussi, and really, as we talked about by extension, Fagundes, to be sort of that creator. And they're capable of it, no doubt about it. The other thing I would flag is set pieces. If LAFC is inviting you into their half of the field and you're winning set pieces, we've seen what Austin can do with those this year. We've seen what Fagundes has done from direct set pieces. They have been... I don't have the stats in front of me, but they've been pretty good on attacking set pieces as well, and they have guys that can do that. LAFC
Wasn't
have
that
also
the
been
opening
really good.
Goal against LAFC at Q2.
Yeah, Gabrielsen, I believe. Yeah,
hit a nasty free kick?
I think Fagundes. I believe Fagundes had the second in
LA. I thought
that
was the opener. Okay.
That was different. That's where the advantage lies. I think on set pieces, Austin have the advantage in this group, and the heart of their team, the soul of their team, is the midfield. Pereira, Ring, Driussi. That core is their strength. So if they're able to win the game and get those players in transition and going, because Pereira is also good at breaking into the attacking half, and then getting Fagundes on the move, because when he is in transition and not having to face a defender 1v1 every time, that's when he's at his best. And Gite is just a force. The guy is a force. He's going to give Segura and Murillo a ton of trouble. And if he has a successful game and just finishes his chances like he did.
That's the question.
That's when Austin really stands a chance to win this game.
Charlie, would you man mark Driussi with Ilya?
I don't think Ilya could cover him man marking. He doesn't have the...
I think to me that's more of a Kellen assignment.
Would you man mark him with Kellen?
I would not man mark him. No.
Yeah. I don't think I would either, but I was just asking.
No. Yeah. All right, what's the prediction here?
And the reason why is because he will pull you out. Yeah.
It kills your shape.
Absolutely. And then you're unbalanced, and then the rest goes to crap.
Yeah.
Who's winning?
I think
the prediction?
I predicted LAFC to win. So I think LAFC win this game because the lack of depth that Austin has. I think LAFC will be on the front foot and aggressive in this game at home. I don't think they believe that Austin will play in behind and probably don't think GTA can really hurt you in that way if they have to break the lines and play in the counter. So in saying that, I think LAFC have enough. They've learned enough. They have enough veterans. I think the group is right. I think Toronto has done a good job. Josh Wolf has done an extraordinary job with Austin. But I think in this case, I'm going to go with LAFC for all those reasons.
Dave, any disagreement? Any feeling
Verde
and black here?
No, I think once the games got set, and even more now, I do think they're both toss-ups. Like, if you told me Austin won MLS Cup, I wouldn't be surprised. If you told me NYC, I wouldn't be surprised, which I don't think is always the case, aka last year. Like, yeah, RSL's on a run, but it would have been a shock. But I still lean LAFC. And I think, to me, LAFC, your hope, if you're an LAFC fan, is they treat this game like Austin treated the Dallas game. They woke up. RSL was their wake-up call. And they came out the gates flying. They imposed themselves and they dominated. The crowd was in it. Your hope is that's LAFC. It was slow. It wasn't the way they probably wanted it against the Galaxy, but you're good enough that you survived. Now you're awake. Now you're at the playoff level. Now Bulanga's experienced it for the first time. You have these other pieces, right? And now you play your game, as Charlie said, on the front foot, trying to take advantage of the momentum and all of that. And so I agree, and I think LAFC, if Carlos Vela starts this game.
Yeah, I think
a lot of that goes out the window if he doesn't.
I think the nod to Austin Dallas is a good one, in the sense that if LAFC can get an early goal, it's going to set up everything that they want to do. And that sounds super obvious, but to go back to sort of the game states they thrive in, if Austin have to feel the pressure to push forward, to extend themselves, to take chances with the fullbacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that is where LAFC can just sort of say, okay, we're in a really advantageous position. We don't have any pressure to be on the ball. And just like Austin, if they got those first two goals, they said, all right, what's our shape? How do we make things really hard for Dallas? Because the onus isn't on us. We got the lead. I think that first 15, 25 minutes, whoever can find that moment, is going to be in a great space. Because, by the way, it's the same sort of thing on the other side. If Austin can get in the lead and the pressure's on LAFC, they are perfectly set up to hit you on the counter as well. So, yeah, first 25 minutes for me, the key. I'm going to take LAFC as well, which definitely means Austin are going to win. Congratulations to Austin. Another bonus game for you. All right, let's go Eastern Conference. 8 p.m. Eastern, FS1, Fox Deportes. We have a rematch. Nick Cushing knows it's a rematch. He says, we're not falling into the narrative. I know what you got. You guys got to write about stuff. You have all sorts of things. You're trying to build stories, but we don't. It's just a game of football for us. But that is the narrative. For the first time since 97-99, when DC faced Columbus in three straight Eastern Conference finals, we have a conference final rematch from the previous season. You know, NYCFC got through. You know, it was a crazy game last year. Philly looked like they were going to do it, but then they had 9 key players out through health and safety protocol. It was Bedoya. It was Andre Blake. It was Wagner. It was Elliott and Glesnes. It was Bendick as a backup to Blake. It was Corey Burke. It was El Seno. It was Alvis Powell. It was Sergio Santos. It was Quinn Sullivan. It was not ideal. And obviously, NYCFC got through and won it. Philly won twice this year. At NYC during their CCL run, which I think you can just sort of forgive and forget if you're the blue side of New York, and then 2-1 in Chester in June. So it's been a little while since these two teams played. The narrative, I think the narrative for Philly is payback. Hey, look, we're at full strength now. We're a better team even now than we were last year, given the offseason moves that we made. You know, now you're looking at their front line and you're looking at Carranza and Ura. And last year it was Shabilko scoring the goal for them to put them ahead in the conference final, like all the way back. They're a better team. Their young players are more experienced. Jack McGlynn started that game last year. He's got more time, has performed better. You know, Glesnes, Elliott, Blake, all at the same level. They're a better team than they were last year, and this feels like payback. It feels like, hey, it's our time. They've been building toward this. They've got Shields. They don't have a cup, whether it be Open Cup or MLS Cup. If I'm Philly, my narrative, this is my year. I bleed gold. If I'm NYCFC,
I bleed gold.
I can't help it, man.
I bleed gold.
Yeah. Just that whole Jay Wright thing.
The whole Jay Wright thing. It still tickles me, and I had to throw it in. For NYCFC, I don't know that there's a ton of pressure on them. It sort of feels like that lack of pressure is kind of, but when they've been thriving on all postseason, like, you know, things weren't perfect under Cushing. They had to make a big transition. No Sands this year, then no Tati. You're relying on a lot of young players. Maxi's still showing he's got it, but we don't know if he's going to play in this game. It feels to me like they're sort of like, yeah, we can do this. We can win it, but it's not like there's a ton of pressure on us that if we don't, it's a huge failure. We won it last year. We have our foundation set. Looks like Cushing is going to be around, and for good reason. He sort of found the note with these guys to get them back on the right track. But look, Maxime Cheneau might not play. Maxi might not play. Those are heart and soul. Like, it's on Philly. Look at Philly. Pressure's on them.
So I tried to bring up a narrative on Monday, but Anders wouldn't allow it, and I don't have the narrative bone that you have to, like, really.
You had a steamroll right through,
yeah. Which was, if NYCFC wins MLS Cup this year, in a 5-year span, I think they will have put up the most points in the regular season MLS combined, and they would add 2 MLS Cups to that in a CCL semifinal.
Are we using the D word? Are we going?
I think so, and I think that's the pressure.
Do you think that they recognize or care about that pressure?
I think being a back-to-back champion in MLS, which is almost impossible in the modern era, that is something that a Sean Johnson and Alex Collins and a Maxi Morales, they understand. So that is the pressure, and that is the opportunity.
Okay. What do you think about that, Charlie? Do you think that those players feel that pressure anyway? Do you think they're thinking about it through those terms? Because I don't – look, Sounders will never be a dynasty. Anders, just to answer all of your chats here.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you
right now. New York City FC is not thinking about the pressure of repeating the championship. They are focused in the here and now. I think they finally feel like they're in a groove. So I don't think at all they're going into this with pressure. The pressure is on the Union. That's where the pressure is, because it is, we need to win this trophy now. Because the whole mantra around the Union is developing the talent that they have through the academy and giving these players an opportunity, giving them a platform and then shipping them off to Europe. They've done that, but they have also brought in some key pieces, some experienced players who have contributed. And Daniel Gazdag's a perfect example of that. Full international comes in and I think frankly turned a lot of heads. I don't think anyone expected the performance that they've got from him this whole year.
Only one person, really. You know the theorem.
Yeah, just one.
You know, it's interesting. Daniel Gazdag, David Goss theorem. It was like Daniel Gazdag was made for this.
Yeah.
So I think in this game, the Union are doing a great job of harnessing that, oh, this is revenge. They knocked us out. They need that. That fuel is a distraction from the pressure.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they're focusing on this narrative, because now they're not thinking about, oh God, we're there. This is it for us. We have to do it. It's more, we haven't done anything yet. We've worked all year to get to this point to play them again. And here we get that opportunity again. It's a rematch.
Guys, look across. Those guys took it from us.
Yes. And so that is why it's a beautiful thing for the Union that it's almost like bow wrapped for them, this game playing at home against New York City FC. And I think there's probably not a better opportunity for Philadelphia Union to get to an MLS Cup final.
By the way, game too. I know, just for Charlie's sensibilities here, as a night game, whereas LAFC Austin is a noon game on the West Coast. So
yes,
you know, tough on those players as far as their pregame routine, so to speak.
The last thing I would add to what Charlie said, which I agree with completely, is I also think that's fits Philly's culture, motif, style. I said it on MLS today. I think they want to be hunters. It's a little tough for Philly to be the hunted because we are outspent. We're going to press teams. We're in better shape. We're not pretty. Like, it's hard to be the favorite and be that, where it's like, oh, if we just play our game, we'll win. That's sort of a tough situation, which is why I actually thought FC Cincinnati was a more dangerous bogey game, because they were heavy favorites. And, you know, it was expected, where this game, to everything Charlie said, now you can go back to no one believes in us. You know, this is BS. Let's just press them. Let's be physical, right? Like all the stuff that makes Jose Martinez great and has made Carranza and Ura special this year and, you know, makes Bedoya so special in this team. I think a lot of that comes back out when you start talking about the game the way Charlie is.
So there's some big question marks here. We have same question in the rundown for this one. Who's the best player in this game? If Maxi Morales was for sure, like we had the word, he's okay. It was precautionary against Montreal. If he was for sure starting this game and had, like, I don't know, 40, let's say 60 minutes of legs, would we say Maxi Morales is the best player in this game?
No.
No.
Okay. Who would be in the running then? Who else is in?
I think Andre Blake? One answer.
Andre yeah, we're Blake. Both going to say Andre Blake. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Goss, you my man.
We didn't even talk about this.
I knew what you said.
Let's
I knew
go.
I can't get the fist bump for leading you right to water here. You let a horse drink, all right? Okay, let's talk Maxi before we talk best player then, because I think this is one of the – he and Bedoya are sort of the big critical, like, hey, hour before the game when you see the lineups. I want to see where those guys are at, how they're able to participate, including Maxime Cheneau. But Charlie has said, and I'll let you say it again, Charlie, do you think Maxime Cheneau will play in this game? He left after –
I do not.
15 minutes, basically, against Montreal.
I do not think he will be able to play. Just – it's literally – and you're taking a big gamble with a center back who clearly has a muscular strain, because you're not coming out of that playoff game with it not being a muscular strain. To the extent, we don't know how severe it is, and they're saying it's not as severe, you know, as first feared. But I will say, Alexander Collins just moves into the middle, so you have Martins and Collins as your center backs, and then Amundsen comes back at left back. It's not a massive thing. I think,
well,
just because you still
it
have
is,
Collins.
Though, are you changing your formation?
No. Why would you change
Collins
your formation?
Collins isn't playing left center back. He hasn't really been a true left back. So then it becomes a bit more of a flat four instead of a five. That's the difference, right? Justin Hack came on later or at halftime, whatever, and he played as a center back for a portion of that game. That's the question mark to me with I agree with you in terms of personnel, who's the next guy in. The question is, does that change your formation at all for NYCFC?
Yeah, I'd say no.
And you lose Collins in the attack where he's been elite, which came out of nowhere, right? Or maybe his ability to at least range a little more and like impose himself on the game.
Kevin O'Toole, man. God, just a left wing back made to be. Kevin O'Toole fan club right here. Forever and always. How about Maxi?
This is how Weeby rolls. It's like the League's Cup thing. Now in a year, he's going to be like, oh, you know what? Bonus game.
No. The League's Cup thing. No.
Yeah, for sure.
Don't you try. Don't you try. Maxi Morales, Dave. What do you think is going to happen there? He had to leave early. 45 minutes. Quote, I will never write him off, said Nick Cushing. I trust our doctors and our medical team. He'll do everything he can to be ready against the Union. It's a final. He's a big player. Big players make sure that they are ready. Will he be ready?
None of that really means anything.
No, for sure.
To me. Yeah. I thought his point that he made where he said he came off against Miami and was ready against Montreal made a bit of sense, where it's like, you're okay, you're still managing him, but they were up 2-0 in Montreal. Like, you don't take Maxi Morales out at that point if you can avoid it. Even if it was 15 more minutes, which tells me at the most, he's got 45 minutes in him, maybe less. I pushed Kalen a little on Monday, sort of wondering with five subs now, do you start a guy like that to set the tone? Because you can replace him and fill in and you still have four or five other subs you can use. But it feels like that's the most you're going to get out of him. That might be enough. this team is deep enough and good enough that 45 minutes. Thomas Magno also got hurt or was limping around at the end of the last game and obviously missed the game before. So you're starting to get into that depth, but that's the way they've set themselves up in me saying, I have no idea. NYCFC doesn't give a lot away in advance. There's not a ton of coverage saying he is or isn't healthy. For example, Alejandro Bedoya, we know, trained full today with the team. It feels safe to say he is definitely available, if not starting, where Maxi, it's a big unknown, and it's a huge loss. He is the best player on this team right now. He's the talisman. He's the experienced guy in that attack. And last game, they changed everything they did when he went off.
What do they do if he can't play? Let's just jump off that scenario. If he cannot go,
yeah,
and he's a bench player, and maybe he has 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is, or maybe nothing, how do you start this game if you're Nick Cushing? If he and Maxime cannot go.
I think you probably start Keaton Parks alongside Acevedo. You slide Santi Rodriguez into Maxi Morales' role. And then either you do, and if Chanot's also out, you do what Charlie says, you bring Odmundson in, and then maybe you push Kevin O'Toole a little higher. Or you start Andrade and Pereira on the wings with Santi Rodriguez as the 10. Those are the options they've gone with, and they will. Eber obviously starts at center forward, so it allows you to move Andrade a little. And that's all include not knowing Thales Magno. If Thales Magno is healthy, it becomes even simpler. Because him, Santi, and Pereira, those are legit creators, and you can get enough out of the attack with Eber leading the line without Maxi.
Mm-hmm.
How about Bedoya, Charlie? What's up? What's up with your boy?
My boy's trying to get back and be ready to start. Because if he can play, he will start.
BC Eagles, drop the mic.
Done. He is the leader, the emotional leader. He's the off the field, on the field captain. I mean, this is a player that the team feeds off of. They need Bedoya in this match. I think for them to win, and if Bedoya is healthy enough to play and play his normal role for this group, they win this game if he can do it.
How much does it take out of him to play his normal role? Because like. Yeah, I think there are some players out there where you say, okay, to play his normal role, and maybe the physical ask is not as high as the physical ask would be of Ollie, given the system they play and the role that he plays within that system. How big is the ask? And how difficult is that when you're coming off an injury the way he is?
The sick thing with Alejandro Bedoya is he does not get tired. He doesn't need... you know, a rhythm of, you know, playing in two back-to-back games to be able to be match fit. He will be good to go if he can play. That's the thing.
That's it.
Is he healthy enough to play? That's all.
Didn't he play with like a torn hamstring in 2019 against Red Bulls in the playoffs for 120 minutes?
Yes.
Like Charlie said, it's fine, and he fits into that role pretty well, and he's got the pieces around him that he knows how to operate. So, yeah, I think if he's out on the field, there is zero proof in his entire MLS career that he won't be effective or an asset for the Philadelphia Union.
Hmm. Should we do a combined 11 for this one just for fun or no?
Yes. Let's okay. do it.
All right. Well, goalkeeper, we're taking Andre. Taking Blake, and that's zero slight at all to Sean.
Okay, what's the formation?
Probably depends on.
Huh? I think you have to go with the better team. You go with their formation.
So you go right, Philly, so you which go Philly. Means
you go to Philly's formation.
So are you telling me Alex Collins is not in this back four?
He is for Jack Over. Elliott.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
Without a doubt, Ooh. Not even a question. Kai Wagner stays.
Yeah.
Then it's Collins.
Who's your right back?
Anton Tinnerholm, if he's healthy the way he can be, right? At his best.
Sure, but is he at his best?
He looked pretty good in the last two games at a playoff level.
That is a coin flip. I mean, Baizo has done has been so solid for the Union. But Tinnerholm would probably be the one just because he's better on the ball. I think he has more of an impact in the attacking half than Abizo does. Defending, though, Tinnerholm's a good defender too. Yeah, so
I would still take it.
Okay. I think Tinnerholm right,
so,
takes
so
that.
Yep. We've got a 3-2 lead so far for the Union.
Are we doing a diamond and a front two?
Yep.
Charlie set the rules. So okay. Defensive midfield.
Jose Martinez.
You gotta go 100%.
Yep.
How about your quote unquote your quote unquote shuttlers?
I think it would be Maxi and Bedoya in my mind.
I'm fine with that because Maxi's been playing sort of
same.
He's been playing further back as opposed to just as a pure 10 with Santi taking on that role. So I'll take mm-hmm. that. And obviously both those guys are question marks for injury for different reasons. So TBD there. You're 10.
And then to me, the next three guys, dog. Really
okay.
I'm not so sure.
You're going to, who are you going to put over them?
Oh, Tyus Magno could get into this team.
You're going to put Tyus Magno right now over Carranza and Ura.
If you had to choose between one of those two, who are you going with? Carranza or Ura?
I think right now I would take Carranza based off productivity this year reliability and fitting the press and all of those.
If you had to put Tyus, you were going to put Tyus Magno and you just had to choose one of the two, which
I would put him with Carranza because yeah. he will do similar things to Ura, which is that run down the left, Ura cuts it back out into the left channel in transition, starting the attack rather than finishing.
That would be my two, Carranza and Tyus Magno.
I would have Ura and Carranza.
Behind those guys that didn't make it into the team, who has more quality? So then you're looking at Santi, you're looking at Gabby Pereira, you're looking at Andrade, Hebert. On the Union side, you're looking at we've taken all their starters, basically. So
Flock is the big one that...
Flynn, Flock.
Yeah. McGlynn.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
No, Flynn. Flock, I love Leon Flock.
And Sean Johnson.
Yeah, Sean John just gets screwed because he's behind the goalkeeper of the year, which is not a step back. I would say the big ones are Flock to me and Santi Rodriguez. I think Santi Rodriguez is unbelievably good. I've also now seen him deliver in big playoff moments last year and this year multiple times. And he would fit, I think, very cleanly in that role that Gosdag plays. He would play it differently, but I think he could be really effective.
Well,
okay.
Said.
All right. Let's, how are they going to play the games? Like, I think we know the Union's style. We sort of understand NYCFC, but I thought it was interesting. Cushing said, hey, look, we've played these two playoff games differently.
Yeah. I thought they sat in last game.
Yeah, they did.
Like, yeah, they came out, they scored, but they sat in pretty deep. And if we're being honest, and I said it on Monday, to me, Sean Johnson won that game for them.
Yeah.
I agree. Do you want to rely on that again? Like, do you want to force that? Right. So what do they do?
You cannot play the same way you did against Montreal against Philly.
So then they got to open their lines up. They got to play higher.
They have to. Not the whole game. You have to take risks and chances at getting into the attacking half by being a little bit more aggressive. But you cannot sit back in Chester and expect to be in this game and rely on Sean Johnson to make these incredible saves throughout the match.
And Philly can create the same chance as Montreal did, which was Kai to the back post, end line, pullback, stuff like that. And they're better at it. So I agree with Charlie. I think if you're NYCFC, you go back to what you did against Inter Miami. You play a higher line. You try and control the ball a little more in your midfield rather than just trying to hit quickly in transition, where I think Eber is a huge factor coming deep and holding up with you. But again, all of that, without Maxi, it's less dangerous and it's less reliable. And if Philly turns you over in bad spots, that's their game.
All right, predictions. What you got?
I'm going Union.
Chalk. Did you have LAFC Union in your final? After my bracket went to pot, I just pulls the phone out. Well, I could get a phone call.
I think he had Montreal.
Thierry Henry's. Yeah, he had Montreal. We both did. I remember that. Thierry Henry's on the phone. So, I guess.
Did you have Montreal Nashville in your final, Charlie?
Oh,
I have LAFC winning.
I knew that would bring him back.
Yeah, the fake phone call ended abruptly right there. All right, I'm going Philly as well. I do think the Maxi issue is a big one. Both Maxis, Maxime and Maxi, And I just think that I think this is Philly's year. I agree with Charlie in the way that the sort of like narrative opens up for them just in terms of keeping their minds off of what is obvious, which is what's at stake. I think Philly's just have shown all year they've been a better team, but NYCFC are not going to be an easy out. It would not shock me in the least to see them win this game.
I think Philly at the beginning to win the whole thing. I have no reason to go away from that, but like you just said with NYC. But I know I'm sticking Philly.
Okay.
It's just everything is set up for NYC. No expectations, no pressure. They're playing good soccer. They know who they are.
So you wouldn't be surprised?
No, not at all. But this is.
I would be surprised if Austin won.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Of both matches?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Either way, I think everything is on the table.
Yes.
So all three of us have picked LAFC Philly as the final, which again probably means we'll see in Austin. Hey, by the way, Jim Curtin is your coach of the year. And congrats, he won it against Wilfred Nancy by 0.1, just a tenth of a percentage point. A tenth of a percentage point. Players,
don't ever think your vote doesn't count. Yeah, everyone exactly. out there, every vote matters.
So players went for Jim, 23%. Nance only got 9.5%. I'm going to guess, you know, look, no offense to players. I'm going to guess they weren't watching a ton of Montreal this year. You know, what happens up north in Quebec can just stay there. Because had they been watching, I think they would have been up from 9%. Media went hard for Nance. I'm going to guess that, you know, we led that train. Maybe there's some people that recognize that. Or maybe they just did it on their own. 44% media for Nance, only 17% for Jim. But still a good percentage for Jim. And then the GMs went almost 30% for Jim, 17% for Nance, and then Trundolo finished third in all of this.
Half these people played with Jim or worked for Jim, but he worked for them.
He is absolutely deserving of the 2022 Sig Schmidt MLS Coach of the Year Award as well. Absolutely deserving. Mm-hmm. He or Nance. I would have zero complaints about that. There are even a couple other guys that could have been in this conversation that I really wouldn't have had beef about. So
I would just say just the recognition that Wilfred Nance was doing his job and doing it extremely well, being in the conversation. Great. But Jim Curtin at the same time has been doing it year after year with the union. Yep.
This is 2 of 3 years for him for Sig Schmidt MLS Coach of the Year. So in 2020, obviously in the pandemic year, they won the Shield. He won it then. 2022 didn't win the Shield, but still gets it
and was given time. I think that's an important lesson for everybody out there. Jim Curtin was given time because he was, I felt like week to week, everyone was like, oh, this could be it for Jim.
Yeah, he was on a 1 year deal for like 4 years.
Fans were booing after every game. They stuck with him. And then finally he got over the hump and has just been a top man since.
And so there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 coaches that have won this award multiple times. Can you name them?
Sig Schmidt.
Bruce Arena. Two times. Bruce Arena has won it 4 times, including 2021.
I will go
Peter Vermees.
Yeah.
Peter Vermees is not one of these folks. In fact, I don't think Peter Vermees has a single Coach of the Year award to his name.
Steve Nichol
has won one, 2002.
What?
So you're two. One won it twice with the same team.
Dom Kinnear?
No. And one won it 3 times with 3 different teams, which might be a hint.
Oh. Schmetzer.
No.
Bob Bradley,
yes. Chicago Fire, Chivas USA, LAFC. You have one more. He won it
one
twice.
More the one that won it twice with the same team.
Same team, different eras.
Oh, interesting.
Different eras. More than a decade apart.
What?
Yeah.
Hey, this is one of those that kills you when you hear it, where you're like,
Anders got it. Frank Yallop. Frank Yallop. 2001 Quakes, Yallop. 2012 Quakes. So congratulations to Jim Curtin is what we're getting at here. Anyway, the conference finals, Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, LAFC Austin on ABC ESPN3 in Spanish from Banc of California Stadium. 8 p.m. Philly, New York City from Subaru Park on FS1 Fox Deportes. Pre-game, we'll be on Twitter Spaces like we always are to go through the lineups, everything else. Post-game, MLS channels, YouTube, MLSsoccer.com, Twitter, Twitch, etc. We'll be there breaking it all down. Okay, so let's get into some other news of the day before we get out of here. We probably got to start here with the report from The Athletic, Pablo Maurer, Sam Stachel, saying there's a potential playoff change coming. 2019 was when we got locked into single elimination. This is all reportedly or rumored, joking, Sam. I love you. And this is a strictly ETR thought experiment here as we go through it. It would go from 13 to 30 playoff matches per year. Right now we have 13. We would go to 30 if this report is correct, or if it whatever happens down the line in the future. 16 teams qualify. That means 8 per conference. That would be one additional team per conference than we see now. You'll also see expansion come in. Obviously, St. Louis is joining, and you know, never rule expansion out. Group stages, the called World Cup style groups, but I will remind folks that groups of four exist in many other tournaments around the world, but the World Cup is the biggest. So it gets called World Cup style groups. Each conference has two. The top two seeds in this report from Sam and Pablo would host two of three games. The lower two would host one game each. Top two finishers advance to the quarterfinals. Then it's single elimination all the way to MLS Cup. First impressions, Charlie, on a playoff format change in this particular format.
Don't oppose a playoff format change. I think this would be exciting. So I'm for it.
What is it? What excites you, I guess?
The amount of intense games, the games that mean something, the intensity, the tempo, the motivation. I think when you're talking about playoff games, there's just a special aura around it. So for me, it'd be more. And I think the demand and the pressure on those matches will be exciting for fans to watch.
I agree with that. I like single elimination. Don't get me wrong. I'm not out here saying that like the current system is broken, but also am not saying that it is as good as it can be. And look, we don't know how it would turn out with this, just as we don't know the games that we'll get out of single elimination as well. Not every game is always top. But I do like the idea of more playoff matches, like you said, at that high level, high intensity, everything matters. And I also like the idea that there is just sort of a better cadence that captures us for longer during the playoffs. It feels to me right now, you know, with that week break, I know you're giving teams rest there, and that is a concern, I think, probably additional games for players, but it feels like there could be more momentum. I thought Steve Cangelosi had a good point about like, hey, if you had 10 straight days of playoff matches and these playoff matches all matter, you know, this is teams' seasons on the line. There's a different level of momentum and interest that comes with that. And I don't disagree with that as well. Dave, where's your head at here?
I think I agree with what both of you said. More big time games. I also do think it will probably favor the teams who are better. So we'll get not the right teams, but deserved teams in championship moments. And it also values the regular season because hosting three home games rather than traveling or two, whatever it is, that's a pretty massive difference. It upsets me a little that there are some teams who make the playoffs and their fan base never gets to see them. So I don't mind sort of adjusting that. And again, the flow, the amount of energy, sort of the experience to bring a city into it as a run goes along, right? I'm a huge Mets fan. They lost in the first round of this year and no one talked about it. Where past years they've been bad, but made a playoff run. And it's like every other day, where are we going? What bar are we going to? When are we watching? And I think that's something that you want to see. So I can understand all of that. I guess the one thing that I've heard from some fans, and I totally understand, is like at some point you got to see what works by settling on it.
Yeah.
And that's the whiplash of you just said 2019, we shifted. When are we going to shift again? But also it's a young league. There are very few sports leagues in the world that are newer, and the ones that aren't are shifting. The NBA just added three playoff spots. MLB just added an extra playoff game. The NFL just added an extra spot. So and then that doesn't even include the NBA trying to start an FA Cup and European teams looking and saying, how do we get more playoff games? So I think all of that comes together, which is this is the reality of where we stand right now. So I can understand being frustrated by change, but I think in general, you're still workshopping what's best.
I agree with that. I'll say a couple things about the potential format here. I understand and I get what you're saying about like, hey, let everybody have a home game. I'm on the flip side of like, no, I actually don't think everybody needs a home game. Like if you are the 8 seed in a conference, yeah, congratulations on making it. But your punishment for not being good enough in the regular season should be that you have to go on the road for 3 games. So if you're a number 1 seed in one of these groups, it'd be 1 or 2 seed in a conference. Like, so be it. You get 3 home games. You earned that. That's what your regular season was about. Value that regular season. Give yourself that advantage of saying everybody comes to us. Like, Our fans get the gift of three games. Our team gets the gift of not going anywhere, sleeping in their own bed, playing at home. That's what you get. Two seed, okay, you got to go to the one seed, but you get to host the other two. Three seed, you host the four seed, but you go on the road everywhere else. Four seed, you're just on the road. Like, be better. And that would be technically the 7 and 8 seeds in the playoffs because you have two groups. That, to me, values the regular season. It provides a very tangible reward for the teams that do better in the regular season. It's a reward in terms of the environment their fans get. It's a reward in terms of the competitive advantage that they get. I would like to see that. I don't want to see draws. Like, boo draws, no draws, force teams to play for it in regulation. So to me, regulation wins would be 3 points, and I'm just talking straight out of you-know-where here. I'm just, like, I'm extrapolating. And PK win is 2 points. Don't go to extra time in these group stage games. You just go straight to PKs. Whoever wins PKs. No extra time. Pass. I'd say go straight to PKs. I mean, look, if it's extra time, I'll watch it too. But if you're talking about three group stage games and they got to have a quick cadence, I think you got to finish it off in 90 minutes and give us some drama. And then I still just go back to, like, man, Apertura Clausura could be really interesting. You play like 15, 16 games. You know, home and away, and you switch it off between Apertura and Clausura. Then you have two playoffs, and you get up to the same number of games, and you have multiple instances to capture people in a playoff format, and one of them's in, like, May and June when things are a little slower. You put Leagues Cup in the middle. You're matched up with Liga MX, which you're already kind of doing. I know it's a little bit difficult for American fans that are not, you know, Liga MX fans are not familiar with that side of things, or that's not their soccer heritage, but we could get there. Yes, Anders, I'm on a rant. Charlie's checked out. I'm here. I have a whole Google doc. I have a whole Google doc from 2019 lining this stuff up. So, you know how I feel.
I see the chat. Charlie,
welcome back.
I think the amount of times Weeby has referenced this Google doc. Weeby, I don't want to be mean here, but it's not that impressive that you created a Google Doc. It's not that hard.
It's just evidence that I've been here before. I'm not saying, like, I'm not going to win, like, a Nobel Prize for this, okay? But it's just evidence that I'm not, like, a Johnny come lately on this idea. But anyway, we'll see what happens. Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts? Any finishing thoughts? Anybody want to drag the Google Doc just a little bit more? Okay. Yeah. Cool. Joseph Martinez, Felipe Cardenas, is reporting that Atlanta is moving on from Joseph Martinez. The last goal he ever scored for the Five Stripes was voted the goal of the year. So according to Felipe at The Athletic, multiple sources who were granted anonymity, I can't say that word. I'm not even going to try. They were granted the right to not have their names be public in order to maintain working relationships with Atlanta. Said the club has been actively pursuing a new number 9. They're expected to sign a forward using the DP spot, but they must first find a contractual solution for Martinez. But the expectation is that he will not be back. A buyout is possible. He has a no-trade clause. If that buyout was exercised, he would be a free agent, and he would skip waiver claims. He's currently on $4.1 million per year. What do you think, Dave?
I think he's going to look good in Minnesota next year.
Hey!
Listen, the first thought when you hear this is it's unfortunate. I think in MLS history, it felt like Joseph in Atlanta was going to be something special. A player growing up in a city, becoming the face of a franchise that was brand new and just being synonymous with the club, it was going to be unique. And it was going to be something that I think a lot of other teams were going to try and emulate. And that went down the drain fast. And a lot of that falls on Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra for the way they've handled the coaching situations at that club, the way they've handled the roster after Tata Martino left. A lot of it falls on them. And then a bunch of it falls on Joseph as well. Injuries are unavoidable, but how he's handled himself probably in training as well as just in the group culturally, that's been a factor. So I think all of that's really unfortunate. And my guess would be that will be the reaction from many Atlanta fans, is that you wish that it hadn't ended this way. And the point was they brought in Joseph and Miguel Almirón, for Almirón to leave and for Joseph to be the face of the team afterwards. And that never really happened, and it never worked out. So that's my number one reaction. But I think I'm more excited. If you tell me Joseph goes to another team, I think I'm more excited to watch Joseph on a different team in Atlanta without him than I would be to deal with this again next year.
To run it back. Yeah, I completely agree. What are the odds he stays in MLS, Charlie? You think he stays here?
50%.
Okay.
All right.
I bump it a little higher.
I would too. We've named a bunch of teams in the past that would make sense for Joseph. I just go back to what we said before. You need a pretty strong and established culture, I think, to integrate him into, to where he can sort of like, he can just sort of get in there, be his best self, which is like, you know, not in a negative way, a very selfish, I get the goals, play me the ball, number nine.
An elite goal scorer.
Yeah, exactly.
The top two are Minnesota and Nashville. You can convince me RSL as well.
I don't think Nashville would do it.
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe they see it as a potential.
How many times can you tell the same story though, right? Wasn't that the reaction coming out of the Galaxy game? Was this again? Who is this team? How do they create chances? Hani by himself, blah, blah, blah. Joseph seems like a fix to that.
Yeah. You do have a culture there that could maybe.
You've got veterans. You've got Dax. Okay. You've got Walker. You've got Godoy.
I'm more open to it than I was. And maybe it might be their last with those guys. With those guys, it might be their, not your last, but like this is like a window. You need to take advantage of that window.
If you're going to put him on a team, what better team than a team that has Shaq Moore and Daniel Lovitz just serving crosses in, right? And then he can affect center backs to allow Hani to do what he does best. It's not maybe the perfect move, but I think it's pretty close for them. And for Minnesota, they take a shot on every forward. Why would you not on Joseph Martinez?
Charlotte FC today or yesterday? I don't know. Announced yesterday. Head coach Christian Latanzio has signed a contract extension through 2024 with an option for 25. I think this one doesn't require a ton of analysis here from us other than to say that's a good move for them. They made a mistake in their first manager. It did not work out. That you might say they screwed up, so to speak.
I don't know that their ownership would, because everyone else also got an extension. It wasn't just Latanzio. Zoran Crneta, their director of scouting,
they screwed the first one up, but they got this one right.
I'm just saying it's interesting that, okay, Latanzio makes sense, right? The math I did yesterday, which could be wrong, his points per game was on pace to be fourth in the East if he had had the full season. The guys who hired the other person built that roster and then had to redo it all in the middle of the season. Interesting to say you believe in them, but why wouldn't you? Because what was built towards the end of the year is something that's shown it can be successful.
Tom Bogert reporting, sources, Columbus Crew have made Montreal's Wilfred Nancy a target for their vacant head coaching job. We teased that on this show a while ago. Montreal's contract option for 2023 with Nancy was automatically triggered when the club made the playoffs, sources added to Tom. So Columbus would need Montreal's permission to interview. What do you think about this, Charlie? If you're Wilfred Nancy, where do you want to be?
I've had a conversation about Wilfred Nancy, and his home is Montreal. It would take a big offer for him to leave Montreal. With that being said, it's a great move for him if it makes sense financially, that he's coming into a club with a trying to put a new look and look into the future with different expectations in an incredible stadium. I feel like he could take that club to the next level with his ideas, the way he wants to play. I thought in the game against New York City FC, he played too defensive. He played too safe because of that pressure. So I think he'll learn a lot about that in changing the tactics before a game like that at home because of the nerves and being in that moment for the first time. Going to Columbus, the expectations to win. To be in the playoffs and to win MLS Cup. That's the expectations. That's what he's going into. And I think he'd be well suited to handle that pressure and take the club to the next level.
I do think when I think about a move like this, that MLS is maybe at a point where, like the player market, that the coaching market should be opened up a little bit more. Like you think about other leagues in the world, if Nancy did what he did, other teams are coming to try to get him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know what I mean? In MLS, that doesn't really happen. You don't really see like an instance like this where like maybe Columbus is going to have to ask for permission. And then to get him, they might have to, you know, he's under contract for next year.
Well,
they might have to give something up.
Right. Because that should be the way it is.
Yeah. No, but it doesn't.
But it should be.
When's the last time you saw that happen?
Agree. But it should be more acceptable and common for Columbus to say, yeah, if we want the coach we want, we have to give up $500,000 allocation because that's what he's worth. And I think that's the part that it's a bit of a foreign concept right now that probably shouldn't be. And maybe it's not allocation money. I don't know the what the
mechanism would be.
Yeah. But I agree with you. Listen, there is some question mark. Like, can he get Zellerion and Kucho to play in his style? He was very intent with the style he played with, and the players had to adjust to that rather than him adjusting to them. But I agree with Charlie about the way they played in the playoffs. I would also say if they played those two games with Zellerion, I think the goals come more often and quicker, right? Those are guys who can create something out of nowhere. Georgie wasn't that guy at the end of the year. Kone's not ready yet. Wanyama's not that player, neither is Piet. And so if you put Zellerion in that Montreal team, I think you're looking at an Eastern Conference finalist.
You also look at what the Crew are doing as far as talent development too, and what Nance was able to get out of Montreal and those young players, and that's got to be pretty attractive for Columbus as well. Long story short, it makes complete sense why the Crew would reportedly be thinking, hey, that guy up there who plays a style of play that we believe in and who's got a ton out of young players as well as established stars, sold players on, got results, that's a guy that we might want.
And so, the reality is there's probably not that much change Columbus does make to their roster because they think they built a good roster and a lot of these guys are locked in. So it's like, it's not going to be, oh, we'll go out and get this DP and we're going to change our entire franchise. Like, you need to find a better team inside of the team you have. And, but you do that by having the best coach you can.
Houston Dynamo, Charlie, reportedly again, per Sam Stashko and Pablo Maurer, interviewing and decently far down the line with Ben Olsen as their head coach. What do you think?
Charlie left.
Ben Olsen is a great person. But if you're telling me you're going to look at Ben Olsen as a serious candidate for this job when you're trying to win and be successful, Ben Olsen has not done anything to give you the confidence that he could be the man for this job. So for me, it's hard to imagine that this is a real candidate for the role, because I know it comes down to a relationship with Pat Onstad. Pat Onstad played for Benny. Benny signed him. He was a DC United, my teammate when I was at DC United. Then he came in as an assistant coach under Benny. I get that loyalty and that friendship. You're going with a person you know. But as far as a coach, I don't see it. I don't see it. That everyone will tell you, Benny is one of the best guys that you can be share a locker room with. A great person, but a coach, no.
Can I, let me just, and I'm,
look
I'm,
at all the options you have across the league.
That, you lose me there, Charlie.
And I don't want to hear, doesn't have head coaching experience.
Yeah, but that, okay, but hold on.
Every head coach has to start somewhere.
Sure, I get that, but Pat Onstad's in a tough spot and that he gave a guy in Paulo Nakamura.
Gave Paulo Nakamura that
opportunity. Then he had to fire him.
He picked the wrong candidate.
Sure, it is his problem because now he's under pressure and he's got to pick a guy that's going to provide him some stability.
I hear you on Benny. No, I go with a guy who is getting his first head coaching experience in Major League Soccer. Great. It doesn't work out. But now I'm going to go back to a guy who's had some of the worst regular seasons in history.
But timeout. I don't disagree with you. And I'm looking at the year by year here. There are some 10 point. You know, that was not a full season. There's a 16 point full point season. We know that one was terrible. But the flip side is there are top of the East seasons in there. So you can't, giving you the totality
of the year with 16 points.
Yeah. That was the worst season of all time. Remember
that it was 16 the number.
Three wins, 21 losses, seven draws.
Although Charlie, they won Open Cup that year.
They did get a trophy.
Oh yeah.
Here's the other thing. Houston Dynamo don't have their roster flexibility. It's like my personal flexibility.
So let's set up a coach who hasn't really proven himself as a coach.
Who has a history.
Flexibility,
who has a history, Charlie, of getting something out of very little. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think Ben Olsen is the ideal hire for Houston. No way, no how am I saying that in an ideal world, he is your hire. I'm just saying there are extenuating circumstances and that if you want to go get, like, we're all imagining like this big, like El Turco or like somebody out in Mexico, but like they're going to come in and say, what are you going to spend on the roster? And you're like, oh, darn, man, we got all
Which
three DP spots field.
To take a new coach. Laurent Simon, Pamuruka, Mehdi Belushi, Shari Joseph, Rob Valentino, all those right off the bat.
But young, you already did that. Motivated. I'm just saying. I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Okay.
So Charlie,
you want to go experience then?
So Charlie, I think your argument is fair, and honestly, I've been making the same one. Right? I would rather see Paul Modica or Mehdi Bellucci or Jason Bent or one of those guys get an opportunity than to retread. But if you are making the decision that's important to you, which is head coaching experience in MLS, the list then becomes very thin, right? Like there are, I don't think there are, if Wilfred Nancy,
if you're going to stick with an MLS coach.
Yes.
Yes.
Then you're talking about Caleb Porter. Talking but about Dom Kinnear.
I think that's why we're trying, I think across the league, we're trying to break that.
But Charlie, again, to go back to it, if you're a coach outside MLS, you want to go to an MLS team where you feel you can make personnel decisions. And I don't know, given the ongoing state of Houston's cap situation, like that they can do it. And this doesn't go back to this year. This is a long-term issue. This is like a multi-year issue for Houston. So yeah, it's a tough position. So maybe you're saying, hey, Ben Olsen is a really good sort of like, we don't have a ton of flexibility. We need a guy who can get like, who can get the culture in a good place, who can make Achi Achi happy, and who can get more out of our pieces than we have this year.
And you assume in a setup in which he's the head coach, but we know Ben Olsen, right? It's more big picture. And Kenny Bundy's probably the assistant who's successful last year and hands-on in terms of style and training and setting up sessions and stuff like that.
I'm not saying that Dynamo fans are going to be like inspired here.
They're not going to.
I don't think they're going to be either way. Anyone. Cause there is no Pat Noonan who is like clearly the next guy up. Ezra Hendrickson, right? Robin Fraser, where it's like, this person is so ready. The team that is finally gives them the chance, their fan base is going to be like, yes. There's no one like that. Everyone's risky.
But also
all the names we said are
Pat
risky.
Noonan is a great fit.
Would Jermaine Jones be that guy?
Would he excite the fan base? I mean, he's definitely a name.
Yeah, I think he could.
If you want, that's a candidate that says, oh wow, actually he's got his UEFA pro license. This is a guy who's done
I completely agree with you, Charlie, on the fact that somebody should give Jermaine Jones that opportunity. Somebody should.
I'm going to throw this out. There's plenty of coaches in Major League Soccer. How do you think Ben Olsen is in this, got his experience? Where was he?
Trust.
Right?
Yeah, it was the GM trusted him.
You have to look at these candidates who have not had head coaching jobs before in Major League Soccer, because everyone has to start at some point. Here's your opportunity. I believe in you. I see that you have a passion for this. You have a plan. You have a vision. And we're going to back you. Jim Curtin, another perfect example. We're going to give you time to turn this club around, to have a culture, to have a philosophy. You have to do that.
But what did Jim have, at least at the start? One, it was an opportunity. And that's sort of what this is too, where like you got to find somebody who's going to do it. Mm-hmm. But he had trust. Like there was a relationship, there was trust, right? Between he and the front office people that were hiring him.
So how much trust?
Yeah, not that much.
At least personal trust that we know you, that we know you, and we know that we understand the job you're going to do.
Every single player. Okay. He knows. He's been in this league since it was basically built. I mean, he's cross paths with everyone. He knows everyone. He's one call away from knowing all these people and hearing about where they come from. Sure. So that's not an excuse
or
an
outfit. The only thing I would say, Charlie, and again, I agree with you. If I was running a team, I would be interviewing those candidates. I think they are ready. I think there's a track record in MLS of already people being successful in early jobs. Ben Olsen did not get all of those things and then completely fail. He won an Open Cup. He won the Eastern Conference. They made playoffs. So that's the one thing where it's not like, yeah, he got a chance because he had trust and he got that chance and was a complete failure, right? He has had success in Major League Soccer to an extent. So you can't completely dismiss all of that.
No one's saying that he hasn't had some success as a coach. Some. But what I'm telling you is you wouldn't be thinking of him as your head coach to lead your organization from the dark ages to a new light in a winning franchise organization that everyone wants to come up, be a part of. What, how's he going to coach Ace Ace? What's he going to tell
Hector
Herrera?
Same way he coached Wayne Rooney.
In tactics.
Lucho Acosta.
All right, do your thing. Here, yeah. Go out. No, no tactics, just yeah. Do your thing. Have
I think
fun.
So. Yeah.
Go out there and play, buddy.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Suerte.
And right now, I think Ace would take that.
Hey, suerte.
Yeah, exactly.
And look, the thing is, Ace, he's got the political power, like, right? Like, if Paulo Nagamura tried to step to Ace, that was a mistake.
It's a learning process for him, too, obviously.
Yep.
You can't go into coaching with an ego. You cannot. Just because you're a former player, former pro, you've done this, it doesn't matter. Take the ego out of it. And that's the problem that some coaches have when they coach bigger personalities or players that have done XYZ, World Cups, Champions League, whatever it is. Take the ego out. All players want guidance and direction from the manager. So what? Simply all it takes is meetings with Ace Ace. This is my vision for the group. Where do you see yourself in this vision? How do you help me fulfill this vision? What do you like? How can we play to your strengths? These kind of conversations, if you're a player, you respect that. You go, okay, the manager is reaching out to me to figure out how we move forward together. Because you have to have that conversation. You know that you're paying this player X amount of money, that he's going to play. That's how it is in Major League Soccer. Ace Ace is never going to be benched when he's healthy. He's going to play. So you have to work together. You can't have it be, I'm the boss, do your work, shut up, play. Run, do this. No, it's not going to work that way. You have to have a conversation. There can't be the bipolar, which I've seen from coaches in this league. It's bipolar one day. Hey, everyone, you're great. Hey, good morning. Shake hands. To another day, doesn't speak to a single person. What kind of culture is that? I've seen it and it never works. You have to talk to players through the good and the bad all the time. And then take it sometimes a level further. How's your family? Focus on the connections, the personal connections, because there's much more to life than the sport. When you take that step, when you make those connections, that's how you move a franchise forward. That's how you get guys to buy in, no matter how much experience you have. For a young player, a young coach, Pablo Murica, Shalri Joseph, Mehdi Belushi, Laurent Simon, Rob Valentino, it's about connecting to your players and telling them your vision and how can we do this together. That's how you move forward. So for me, I want to see more coaches come into this league who have played, who are closer to this generation now, easier to connect, and start to move the game forward. That's the only way we're going to continue to have this league like develop, is getting more coaches experience. They have to start at some point. Jermaine Jones, yes, he's had his ups and downs off the field, and he's been outspoken. But you can't deny the fact that he has achieved, that he's a student of the game, he loves it, and he's taken all the necessary steps to make sure he has all of the education down. Why wouldn't you, in this case, give him a chance? Why not?
Do we have enough time to respond or no?
I don't know. Go ahead.
Andres says, let's wrap it. I think we've had a great conversation here.
I got my vent in.
And Charlie, I agree with a lot of what you said, and you know more about this than we do, and I think a lot of that's true. And I think there's been some strides of starting to get new faces in, right? The fact that this list is shorter than it used to be, the fact that we're not saying Jason Kreis, the fact that everyone's not pushing him.
We're saying Ben Olsen. It's the same thing.
We are. Jason we are.
And Jason Kreis has won MLS Cups.
Ben Olsen won Open Cup. He won the Eastern Conference. Yeah, I get that. The one thing I would say, though, is you're talking about not having that the coach talks to you one day and doesn't, it feels, and I don't know him personally, it feels tough to think that Jermaine Jones wouldn't be that, just based off what we know off the field. And so are you really going to culture set from him? And I get it, right? He's grinded. He's worked hard in his career. But that's not always something that coaches can pass along.
Have you been in a locker room with Jermaine?
I have never been in a locker room with Jermaine Jones.
He's not the guy that avoids people.
Okay. So that's fair.
I can vouch because I've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you would know much better than us.
And I repeat what I said before, Charlie, that somebody should give Jermaine Jones a shot. I would go back to somebody has to give Jermaine Jones a shot that feels super secure in their job.
Well, and this is sort of one of them. So
right now Houston is in a little bit of a.
Well, clearly they made the mistake with Paulo Nagamura, right? That was their let's give someone a chance who's new. But also now you're working backwards. You have Ace Ace in. Now you're trying to find the coach. You should be doing it the other way around, right? You should be bringing Ace Ace into the culture you set to play under the coach that's convincing him to come. Now you're trying to reverse engineer it.
Not all the time.
Okay, but now you're reverse engineering it of like, who will fit with him, which is a mistake.
Well, that's actually, it's an advantage for Pat Onstad because whoever he's interviewing, he goes, you see the team.
How do you work with them?
You know we can't make any changes, really, because of the contracts. How do you get this team to play? I think it makes it easier because you're saying, don't even think about bringing players in. How do we get the best out of this current group? What's the formation? What's the tactics? Go. I think it's pretty easy, actually.
We'll see what the final result is.
Mm-hmm.
TBD. All right, that was a long show. We hope you enjoyed all. If you got to the rants at the end, I mean, congratulations to you. You're our people, all right? If you want to sit around and talk about the Houston Dynamo head coaching position for like an hour and a half, we can do that. We almost did. We 90-minute players here, Charlie. Dave, I mean, you're right off a plane, maybe a little bit hungover.
This is my second show of the day.
And you're delivering. Appreciate that. All right, we'll be back next week to do what else? Preview MLS Cup. Then we're going to MLS Cup. We'll find out where that is this week in conference finals on Sunday. ABC, the Western Conference, LAFC Austin, 3 p.m. ESPN3 in Spanish on that one, and 8 p.m. Union NYCFC on FS1. All right, we're out of here. We'll see you on Monday, everybody. Adios.